What do you think could be done to get better teachers, get people who are good in the education system? How do you think technology is going to change self-education in the future?
What's up, guys? It's Prince EA here for another episode of Sauna Sessions. I've got my producer, Dustin, alongside, and we are going to talk about something super special today, something very near and dear to my heart. I believe it's the best investment that a human being can make. No, it's not crypto. It is self-education. So today, Dustin and I, we're going to talk about education, self-education. We're going to talk about the school system. You guys all have my video, I Soothe the School System. So, you know, my thoughts and ideas and passions around education are really, really bold, really different. Yeah, really, really, I think, important. Like I said, I think education is the most powerful force on the planet. And, you know, if we want to change our planet, then it starts in changing our education, shifting to right education and taking an individual responsibility in self-education. So that's going to be the topic of the day. And Dustin is going to feed me a few questions and we're going to jump in. How's that sound?
It sounds great. I guess the first thing is, since you made that video, has your opinion changed at all, or your beliefs about the education system? Or
they didn't really change. I think they've definitely evolved. You know, I think while that video, that was an 8-minute video, and I covered a lot of ground. I talked a lot about self-education, but also the importance of having good teachers. And I think, honestly, now I think I will say I've shifted one of my themes that I find very important, and that's having great teachers. I think having great teachers is probably the most important part of education. It's so rare because, you know, the way I grew up, St. Louis, 73% of the kids in the public school system are economically disadvantaged, and the byproduct of that is also the teachers also are, a lot of them are economically disadvantaged as well. And so whether it comes to materials, resources, books, we don't get the best quality stuff. So I didn't have the best teachers growing up, I feel. I don't feel like I was seen, you know, that much by my teachers in, you know, grade school, middle school, university. It kind of shifted. But yeah, growing up, my teachers weren't, you know, they didn't really see me or invest in me. I was just kind of like a cog in the wheel, just a number in the system.
Yeah, definitely see that. I think across the board, I'm not just in St. Louis, but everywhere. So there's a saying, if you can do, do. If you can't do, teach. What do you think could be done to, like you said, get better teachers, get people who are good in the education system?
Yeah, you know, where do I start? You know, I think a lot of school districts, superintendents, they look towards innovation. And I think innovation is great. I think adding in technology in classrooms is awesome. I think that can definitely create more engagement. But I don't think it's as much as we think. You know, the difference that it makes is not as great as we think it is. The biggest difference is having great, effective teachers. And so how do you create great, effective teachers? Well, I think it's not as much about innovation as it is about replication. I think there are some teachers in certain school districts that are doing great jobs. And so the other teachers, I think, should shadow them, should, you know, sit in their classrooms to understand. They should kind of model their techniques and strategies after the teacher that's doing well. So that's the big one. The number one, I think, most important thing, it's not about innovation as much as it is about replication. And I think teachers, you know, I think the number one thing teachers should do is let go of teaching. And when I tell people this, they're like, what do you mean? Well, there's 85 million teachers worldwide. And I tell them all they should let go of teaching. Don't be a teacher, be an educator. Teaching is a job title. An educator is a person. The word educate comes from the Latin root educare, meaning to draw out. So a teacher teaches, they put things into the heads of the kids. An educator draws things out. It brings things out of the student. And that's where the gifts, I think, come from. That's where the inspiration comes from. And that's the most important job I think there is on the planet, is being a great educator. I mean, that's how we're really going to, advance as a city, a state, a country, and the world is Ooh. Better education. And it starts with better teachers.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ground floor for everything, right? It's like if you want somebody who's good at inventing, somebody who's good at, you know, they got to be educated. They got to know their superpower, right?
Yeah, and the thing is a lot of people, I think, don't have the confidence to discover that superpower. You know, like I think a lot of teachers are trying to be a good teacher as opposed to trying to be the best them. Like I think they have a unique signature that they have to kind of get out there as well. Like don't try to emulate what you think a good teacher is, but bring out your own gifts, bring out your own abilities. And I think that's the way to elevate is to it all comes down to authenticity, because that's how you're going to connect. And you're not going to teach anybody anything if you don't connect with them. You know, there's an old saying, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So relationship is so important. Students don't learn from people they don't like. You know, I think it was the late Rita Pearson who said that. So there's so many different ways to, I think, up-level teaching. But it ultimately comes down to care. It comes down to relationship. It comes down to having a growth mindset as opposed to a fixed mindset. And also, like I said, replication or emulation as opposed to innovation. I don't think iPads are gonna save any child. You know, it's gonna be the heart of the teacher shared with the child to reach them.
That makes sense. Yeah. And I can see it even being causing more of a disconnect in a lot of ways if you're starting to rely too much on technology and not getting that personal connection.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, that was my first big video. It was, can we auto-correct humanity? You know, and it was all about how we're so distracted on these phones, on these screens. And yeah, in classrooms too. I think, yeah, it's that's a big one. I think every educator, every teacher probably has to go figure out how they're going to do that one, because it can be, technology can be a big distraction. But if you can engage, if you can create a relationship, I think that's the best protection against distraction. You're able to really, really connect.
I want to ask you, you have your degree in anthropology and things. What is your thought on university? Is that worth investing in? Is it worth somebody going into a higher education? Do you feel like you got your money's worth out of it?
Well, I got lucky. I got paid to go to school. You know, I so interesting. So let me tell you a little bit about my story. So like I said, I wasn't a great student. I sat in the back of the classroom. My fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Williams, wanted to hold me back a grade. She said I was mentally incompetent. She didn't think I was smart enough to go from the fifth to the sixth grade. My mom, I mean, she denies this to this day. But, you know, I mean, and you know, she always wanted the best for me. But seeing how it was, she thought that I had learning disabilities growing up. Like for me, I knew I didn't have a learning disability. I knew I was just spiritually malnourished. I didn't care about school. I didn't have a connection to education. And then fast forward to high school, where I find my favorite teacher ever. You know, this was the teacher that, man, they changed everything. They made me care. They made me curious. They were engaging. They were enthralling. They told stories. When I listened to these lectures, I used to, you know, take what I learned in these lectures and go to the library and read and learn about all the words that they were teaching. And people say, okay, who was your favorite teacher? And I say, and my favorite teacher was hip hop. It was hip hop music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hip hop music, where you had artists, rappers speaking on topics from socioeconomics to religion to geopolitics in a way that was cool. And that's why I ended up creating a company called Make Smart Cool. These rappers, man, they were so inspiring, and because they were so passionate about what they were talking about, that passion kind of rubbed off on me. And so I started from there. I started sitting in front of the classroom. I started engaging and battling with my teachers about different subjects, questioning. I got kicked out of class sometimes, but I was there. I was now participating. I wasn't just a potted plant in the back of the class anymore. And so after that, my grades, I mean, fast forward to college, I graduated at the top of my class. And it wasn't because I feel like I was smarter than anybody else. It was because I was just more curious. I was more passionate about the subject. And so many students that aren't as lucky as I was to find that or to discover that at the right time in the right place. So your question is, university worth it? I excelled. you know, learning certain skills in university are crucial skills, like critical thinking. Me, I, like I, you said, I studied physical, biological anthropology. That gave me the ability to be critical about everything, the ability to be able to read scientifically peer-reviewed journals, the ability to do proper research, the ability to separate my opinion from the truth. So I think it can be worth it, absolutely, but it depends on the individual. I think it's worth it. Do I think it's necessary? No, I don't think it's necessary, because we have so many success stories of people who didn't go or who dropped out, you know, freshman year and ended up being mega successes. So university, I think it depends on what you study, why you're studying it. Are you passionate about it? But not just the educational aspect of it. You've also got the relationships that you can build in university. And I think those memories will last forever for me. Like those memories in university, in my dorm room, like that was incredible. That was a beautiful experience that I'll never forget. And I still have, you know, some of my best friends I met in university, some business partners I met in university. So I'm not anti-education or even anti-school, but as Mark Twain said, I never let my schooling interfere with my education.
I'm just curious, who, like, what hip-hop artists really inspired you?
Yeah, so you got, it's so many. So I was very into lyrics. So I wasn't just into the beat like a lot of people are. I was into, okay, what are you saying? And I'm still into words. I'm still, like, I love people who can string words together, use these literary techniques, alliteration, metaphor, simile, like it's an incredible skill. So some of the artists I love that really impacted me growing up, it was two main ones. It was a guy who's a Peruvian rapper from Harlem, New York, named Immortal Technique. He had an album called Revolutionary Volume 1 and Revolutionary Volume 2 that totally just, I used to listen to it every day. It changed everything for me. It was very political, very revolutionary. He taught me about Che Guevara. He taught me about, you know, politics. And this was during the Bush administration. So it was incredible. There was this other guy named Cannabis, Can I Bus, who was a super, super dope rapper. And it's funny because I ended up doing a song with him and Immortal Technique. We ended up connecting. He was kind of like a mentor for me later. But Cannabis has a song that is called Poet Laureate. And I still think, yeah, I'll bet everything that if you really looked at it critically, this is top five hip hop songs of all time. It's called Poet Laureate. And the verse, it goes like, alone in my room, looking through the 32X telescope zoom, adjusting the focus of the moon. One should not assume the philosophies of David Hume are nothing more than a subjective conclusion. What is the maximum field rate application of runaway glaciation affecting the ocean basin? And I'm listening to these rhymes and I'm like, who is David Hume? Who the heck is that? So I start researching him, David Hume, Scottish philosopher. It was so incredible because these lyrics that Cannabis was speaking, they led me down so many rabbit holes that ultimately enhanced my vocabulary and enhanced my understanding of the world. Right. And it was through music. I mean, what's more exciting than music? I think music, you know, somebody said music has done more for race relations than any legislation ever has. It's brought people together more than any politician has. Music is super powerful. That was definitely the way that I learned in the beginning. It was through lyrics and beats. How about you? Who were some artists that
when I was growing up? I don't know. I was growing up, I was very like just into rock music.
And okay.
Almost the opposite, I would say, of you. I was more into like the beat and the rhythm, and I was obsessed with playing guitar growing up and in high school and just like mastering that. So almost like the opposite side of it, not as much as the lyrics and stuff. So.
You like the beat, how it made you feel inside your body, and it's like...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The tone of their voice and how...
Yeah, that's a part of it too. Yeah. See, me, I'm just more like... I'm very cerebral. Like I don't even dance really. Like I might dance about my, you know, if I'm alone or, but I don't express myself that way. Like I'm definitely a thinker. So I love things that kind of are intellectual and very cerebral, and getting into my body has been something that I think you need a balance of mind and body, but getting into my body with music has never been the way for me, it's always been like sport other instead of music.
Okay.
And maybe that's because of hip hop too, because hip hop, you don't really, you're trying to be cool. Like, you don't really dance. You
know, right.
Fat Joe, he said, I don't dance. I just pull up my pants and do the rock away. It was a song called Lean Back back in the day. So maybe it was that, but that's interesting. That's interesting that you felt more the beat, the rhythm than the lyrics. That's cool.
Yeah, I felt like that was more of my motivation of like getting up and doing stuff. And like, you know, I've never been one to sit in silence. I always felt like I could focus better with something in the background, whether it's music or even sometimes even just TV and just other conversations going on. Kind of helps me focus.
Interesting. White noise and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. What are your thoughts? You can do the silence, right?
I mean, but I sleep with a white noise, but a noise machine. I love, you know, having that. But I also like working with music. Like when I'm doing some tasks, I listen to this. It's a website called Brain.fm, where these beats are they're created by neuroscientists, and they're designed to put you in certain brain states. So I listen to that. I think that's super helpful. But also, yeah, I think silence is golden. It's definitely something that when you can get comfortable with it, there's nothing better. There's really nothing better than a quiet mind. When we go to deep sleep, right? It's the most amazing thing ever. The most amazing thing ever. Deep sleep, not like dreaming sleep, but deep sleep. We wake up, somebody says, how did you sleep, Dustin? And I'm like, oh, I slept great. But nothing happened. You weren't even there. It was just total silence. So I think something deep down in us longs for that silence. I think that's why some people like going to nature. They like going to whether it's streams or the woods, because the mind, it quiets. I think even when you do extreme sports like bungee jumping, there's no more thinking that really happens. It's just, you're just in the moment. And I think we as humans, we long for that silence. And the more we can be comfortable with it, definitely the better our lives are and the better control we're in when it comes to intrusive thoughts, because we can now separate the silence from the noise or the signal from the noise.
So you touched on earlier about mentors. What do you think makes an effective like mentor relationship, and how do you suggest people find the right mentor for them?
That's a great question. I think a mentor is crucial. I think it's definitely a cheat code in life. I always say if you're going through something, you know, whether it's an issue, a relationship, a depression, somebody else has gone through it 10 times worse than you had it, and they've written a book about it, about how they got out of it. So for me, my mentors were always books. You know, I grew up very introverted, very like isolated in North St. Louis. So I didn't really have many mentors. I mean, my parents were mentors in a way, but they didn't have the same path that I had, you know, the vision that I had. So while they helped me, and I think in very deep ways, my mentors came from the books, came from the musicians, you know, like I said, like the Immortal Technique and Cannabis, they eventually kind of became a bit of mentors and guides for me. So I think a mentor is a cheat code in life, and you just have to have the courage to reach out. And I think it's important to, if you see somebody who has a life that you want, then reach out. But be careful, because it's not only the external life. You have to also make sure that they live the internal life that you want. Because a lot of people who are in the spotlight, they have a lot of shadows inside of them. And they don't exactly live the life that they portray. So you want to make sure that, number one, that's what you really want. That lifestyle is what you really want. Deeply, you know, like it's. I think Zig Ziglar said, it's great to have proper motivations, but you also have to have proper motives. So you have to make sure your motive, your why is pure and what you want. And so if there's somebody who has the lifestyle you want and they have the energy that you want to carry, I think you reach out to them. And the thing about mentors is a lot of them, they want to share their experience. They want to help the younger version of them, you know, like, when you get to a state of success, and not just external, but internal success, you want to share, you want to serve. The word hero, I think, comes from the word servant. So a hero is somebody who serves, who gives back. So yeah, I think finding somebody who you really want their lifestyle, their energy, and learning from them. But even if they don't, like you might say, be careful, even if they don't have the internal dimension that you desire, that's fine. You can still learn, whether it's the business skills, the external things that they have, but you have to be very vigilant and diligent in your ability to discern, because it's easy to get caught up in that whirlwind, and what you think you want might not be what you really need. And you end up living a life where you're climbing a ladder and you realize, damn it, it's against the wrong wall. I climbed all this way and I'm just off. So reaching out, one way to find a mentor also is to serve them, to do something for them, to find out what they need. Not even asking them, hey, what do you need? No, you just do it. You just see maybe some gaps in, you know, whether what they're doing in business, something. And you just help them. You give. And then they're more likely to want to give back. But yeah, I think having a mentor is crucial. But if you're like me, I didn't have many mentors. I had more books. So I was just a freaking, I don't know. I was just so thirsty for knowledge and information that I would read so many books. My library, I really to this day don't know. There's only one guy who I stepped in his house and he's got a bigger library than me. And that's a guy named Paul Check. And yeah, he's a he's a voracious reader like I am. But yeah, books are crucial. They say every house, I think over like $1 million, has a library in it. And you wonder why. I say, why is that? Well, because you need the education to be able to get the house.
Ooh. Since we're on the topic of books and stuff, what are like the top three books you think everyone should read?
Ooh, okay. I think you need something on the mind, the body, and the spirit. I think that's it. I mean, there's no other dimension of human existence than that. It's the mental, it's the physical, and it's the spiritual. So for the mind, I think you have to find a book that I would recommend something on CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, because I think learning these tricks, the tricks of the mind, the way that the mind works, is going to put you in a very advantageous position to transcend the mind and to be able to use the mind and not be used by the mind. So I would say a book like David Burns, Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy. That's one of my favorite books. Think and Grow Rich is also a great book. Napoleon Hill, I would say those two. On the body, you know, there's a great book by Michael Greger called How Not to Die that I really liked. It was one of my favorite books that I read. You know this book?
I don't.
It's a great book. Michael Greger, he's a plant-based doctor and author, and it's a best-selling book, and it really gives the evidence, the science on what to eat. So, you know, I think exercise is queen, nutrition is king, and you put them together, you have a kingdom. So some people say exercise is king. I actually think nutrition is king. I think nutrition is definitely number one. I think having a great book that's based in the science of what to eat, I would say the Dan Buettner's Blue Zone Diet. He's got a cookbook as well. But some book that's going to teach you how to eat and just going to lay it out, I think is crucial. And the spirit, I mean, it depends on what tradition you connect with, what spiritual tradition you really connect with, because I think we're all different and we all have different portals. So whether that's a Buddhist book, a Sufi book, a Hindu book, a Christian book, a Islamic book, I think you need something as a foundation so that you can enter that spiritual dimension. I think it's so important, because if you live a life of just mind and body, it's a very primal existence. You miss a level of dimension of existence that is actually beyond both of those. It's kind of like the king, spiritual dimension that is beyond thinking. But I can name a dozen books off the top of my head. I mean, in the spiritual and the mental, they very much overlap in some senses, because through meditation you use the mind to transcend the mind. Or through tantra, you use tantric spiritual practice, you use certain methods to transcend the mind. But I would say the Tao Te Ching is probably the number one book I would recommend to people. It's a book that it changes every time you read it, because you see it from a different perspective every time you open it. So I would say the Tao Te Ching is a good book for beginners into the going into the spiritual practice. The Bhagavad Gita is a good one. I think Be Here Now by Ram Dass is a good one. Love, Service, Devotion. Ram Dass on the Bhagavad Gita is also a good one. I think it's so important to find an author and a subject, a tradition that you really resonate with. Because like I said, we're all different. We all have different upbringings. But ultimately, the spiritual tradition, if it's really true and really right, is going to lead you to the same path, which is love.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's now it's back to what I grew up with music wise. All you need is love. The Beatles was just like, that was such a huge influence for me of like just really giving everybody love and respect and appreciation. And yeah, love is powerful.
You get to a point. So the Buddha had a quote where he talked about being on a canoe. You take this canoe across to the other side. Right. You take it on this journey across to the other side of the river. You don't keep the canoe on your head as you walk, walk along the path, right? You leave it there and you move on. And I think knowledge is the same way, right? You use the knowledge to get to the place that you really want to go. And then you're free from the ideas. You're free from the knowledge that you got, because knowledge can turn into a bondage, a prison. There's a lot of people that are stuck in ideas. Right. They say your ideas about happiness can actually stand in the way of you being happy. So a lot of people are walking around with that canoe on their head. But the ultimate point of the practice is to play in the game. Right. So you let go of the practice and now you're free from it all. So this is the purpose. I mean, it's ultimately to live as love. You don't need to quote any scriptures anymore. You don't need to religion. You can, but ultimately if you're being that, that's all you need. It's interesting that all you need is love. Who made that? That was the Beatles.
Yeah.
What guy? He was,
John Lennon was a
John
big
Lennon. Yeah.
Of, yeah. Sharing love and respect. And
yeah, that's it. I mean, that's, I think, why we're here. And my favorite definition of love is love, let others voluntarily evolve.
With all this media and everything really blasting us in the face, how do you suggest people stay on top of like self-education and learning what they need to learn and staying on top of their game?
Well, I think the mentor is crucial. I think having a mentor that you regularly talk to on a schedule is definitely important. That's one way. And community as well, right? So you have accountability with people in the community that are also trying to achieve the goals that you want, right? So if you're isolated, it's much more difficult. But if you're around people that are already in possession of the goals that you want, that's by osmosis, you're going to get that, right? So I think that's number one. Number two is you have to remember your why. Viktor Frankl, he was a Holocaust survivor. He lived in the concentration camps. His father, his mother, his wife, his son, everybody died. Everybody was killed in the Nazi concentration camps. And he said there's two types of prisoners that he saw. He said the first type of prisoner was the one who simply accepted what was happening. And the second type was the prisoner who had a why behind what was happening. And that why could have been, once they get through this, they're going to be able to tell the story. They're going to be able to share this and prevent it from ever happening again. And the prisoners in that second category who had the why were the ones who, he said, survived. So I think remembering your why is super important. Write it down. What is your why? Be very specific on that, you know, because he said he or she who has a strong enough why will be able to overcome any how. So it doesn't get much more credible than Viktor Frankl, to be honest. So community, remember your why, and also create habits, right? Create good habits that put you in the position that you want to be in. Whether it starts with a morning routine and it ends with an evening routine. So in order to, I think, remember to be, you know, constantly just up leveling and enhancing your education, you have to put yourself in a positive state. And you also have to schedule it in. You have to literally put in self-education time in your schedule, because if you don't, you're just not going to do it. So what I like to do is I like to what's called habit stack. That basically means you stack a bunch of habits on top of each other. So for instance, that could be walking. So while you walk, you also might be grounding, which is basically your shoes are off, you're in contact with the earth with your bare feet. You're also underneath the sun, getting the vitamin D. You're also in nature, you know, just surrounded by trees, which also has a big effect. And you're also listening to an audiobook or something like that. I think that's a great technique that I like to do. So I do like maybe an hour of walking like every day. That gives me time to also listen to a book and continue to educate myself. And what I've noticed actually too is if I'm in a poor mood or if I'm like, man, what's going on with me? Like I'm just not feeling on. And I have this checklist. And a lot of the times it's because I'm not learning anything new. I'm not getting any new information. It's really challenging me. I'm really just in the same old, same old. So I think having set time every day where you do educate yourself is one way to create that habit and regiment it so that you can make sure you're on a path of continuous growth.
You mentioned audiobooks, mm-hmm. and obviously like 20 years ago, there were some, but it wasn't as much of a thing. Mm-hmm. How do you think technology is going to change self-education in the future?
That's a good question. Well, it might be implants, right? Like you might be able to just download a book one day, you know, or like kind of like you remember in The Matrix, Keanu Reeves, he's like, yeah. I know Kung Fu.
Yeah.
You know, it might be that. And that's a scary world to think about. I think self-education is definitely going to change, especially with the advent of AI and ChatGPT, things like this, where they can do the research for you. They can do these tasks for you. So I think creativity is going to be worth more. Having the ability to stretch and to connect two distinct ideas is going to be a lot more valuable in the future. That's the way I see it.
For the last question, I kind of want to turn the tables on you a little bit. You'll ask your bests. What's the best piece of advice that you ever got?
Yeah, the best piece of advice I ever got is discover who you are. Discover who you really are. Who is the I? I can expound on that briefly. You know, it's interesting because when we look at our bodies, our hair is growing and we say, we don't actually say I'm growing my hair. Or we don't say I'm growing my nails. We don't say I'm beating my heart. We don't say I'm breathing this breath. There's something else doing it. Even the thoughts, right? The thoughts, like we don't actually think thoughts. Thoughts just kind of happen. They appear. And so to find out who is the I behind all of that, who is this me that I go around, that I seem to go around being, this is the most important advice I think I ever got, to find out who are you? Who is the I? Where does to whom do the thoughts come to? Because I think once you have this foundational understanding, life, it becomes almost a miracle, and it immediately transported into a new dimension of existence where you're no longer a prisoner. You're now free. And I think freedom is what we're all looking for. It goes back to the question you said about, when I brought up sleep, how we go to, you know, we buy these expensive beds to go to a place where nothing exists, not even us. It's like we all want to be free from it all, free from the thoughts, the noise, all of that stuff. And I think when you can trace the I back to its source, this is, I think, the most important journey a person can make if they're called to it, because not everybody's called to it. All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in to Sauna Sessions. I really enjoyed that one, going deep in education and self-education. And yeah, so much fun. It's such a topic that I'm just passionate about, because I think if you get the education right, then everything else falls into place. So thank you guys for tuning in this week. Make sure you subscribe, comment, rate, share, and let me know how you like this episode, and make sure to tune in next week on Sauna Sessions. See you then.